This is Jay Sekulow, a victory for the Bible in public schools.
Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Sekulow Live. Phone lines are open for your questions right now. Call 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. And now, Chief Counsel for the American Center for Law and Justice, Jay Sekulow.
Hey everybody, welcome to the broadcast. Well, we're going to talk about a variety of topics as we do, but we've got a couple of wins I want to talk about. Let me set up the program of what we're going to deal with today. So we've got a couple of what I call old school ACLJ wins. We're going to talk about that. I say old school because these were cases, this is how we started the work of the ACLJ back in the 1980s and early 90s with a lot of the Bibles and school cases and controversies. You'd think those would be done. We've won those cases at just about every level of court in the country, including the Supreme Court, but here we are. You still have them. So we're going to talk about that coming up in the program. We also have some developments in Washington, D.C. as it relates to discharges and judges and then some of the discharge issues as it relates to I think we should actually hit that. So, Than, let's talk about where we are on that, because that is something that people have been following. We'll get to the next segment. We'll get into a couple of nice wins we've had, and Abby Sutherland is going to give us those. But, Than, let's talk about where we are in Washington right now.
Yeah, Jay, this is the Born Alive Abortion Survivors Protection Act, the bill that says that if a child survives abortion, is on the table in need of medical care, that medical care must be provided. Of course, that bill was sponsored by Senator Sass in the Senate. It's sponsored by Congressman Wagner in the House. Jay, Speaker Pelosi won't schedule it for a vote, even though I think it has the votes in the House to pass. So what has happened is Whip Scalise has filed what is known as a discharge petition on the floor of the House. Simply put, Jay, that means that if a majority of the House, 218 members, go down to the floor and sign that discharge petition, the Rules Committee will have to schedule it for a vote. It's a way to circumvent Speaker Pelosi. Jay, in the first day of signatures, it garnered 198 signatures. So we still have a little ways to go, need 20 votes to go. But on day one, 198 members of the House of Representatives signed that discharge petition. If you can get to 218, Speaker Pelosi won't have any choice. That Born Alive bill, that will be scheduled for a vote on the floor of the House.
And you think it would pass the House?
I think if forced to a vote, it would. I think there are a bunch of members on the Democrat side of the aisle that do not want to have to take that vote. Mm. But I think if forced to vote, it just might pass.
Yep. So then, of that 20, some are Republicans who just haven't signed on yet that we believe will. I mean, about how many more Democrats would we have to find to get to that magic number?
You've got two Republicans, Jordan, who are out of town, Francis Rooney and John Rutherford of Florida. They will likely sign when they get here. That would bring it to 200. So you would need 18 Democrats to sign as certainly currently constituted. Jordan, I would tell you, though, there are three vacancies, and Republicans have a pretty good shot in each of those races. So that could trim the number even further. But bottom line, Jordan, you are going to need 15 or so more Democrats to ultimately force the Speaker's hand on this.
Is there a way, like in the next 24, 48 hours, we could develop a list of like the top 20 to get to that 15 number for people to call? So that we know, like,
certainly.
Okay, out of the Democrats left, we know some are very pro-abortion, they're not going to sign on. But if there's 20 or so that are kind of on the fence, maybe our listeners can call those offices, and we can get that 15.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we can put that up at aclj.org this afternoon, Jordan.
All
we
right,
can give
great.
Listeners the number who have signed, the number who are pending, and then also those top targets.
And you do think we can get there?
I think it's an uphill fight, Jay. I'm not gonna tell you it's not, but it is an issue that the vast majority of the American people support. And I will tell you this: the vast majority of elected officials, they say they support it, Jay. But now here's their chance to put their name on the line.
I think getting that grassroots pressure going, getting the names, getting the phone calls into the offices. I know all of you always ask, "What can I do? How can I help push this forward?" We're gonna get the list together for you. The kind of target Democrats who could be part of that 15 to push this over a line that would then require a vote that Nancy Pelosi could not stop on the Born Alive, the Survivor Protection Act, Born Alive, Surviving Abortion. We are taking your phone calls at 1-800-684-3110. Some big victories to announce the ACLJ, old school style victories at the ACLJ. Give us a call, 1-800-684-3110, and our matching challenge at aclj.org. Whatever you donate online is doubled. Double the impact of your donation right now at aclj.org.
At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. Whether it's defending religious freedom, protecting those who are persecuted for their faith, uncovering corruption in the Washington bureaucracy, and fighting to protect life in the courts and in Congress, the ACLJ would not be able to do any of this without your support. For that, we are grateful. Now there's an opportunity for you to help in a unique way. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's Matching Challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. This is a critical time for the ACLJ. The work we do simply would not occur without your generous support. Take part in our matching challenge today. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at aclj.org. Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift.
Was this like, how many? So this is old school Jay Sekulow band. Talking about old school, we're talking about schools because we've got to win. We don't talk about these a lot, but let me tell you how the ACLJ started. We started, some of our first cases were gospel literature distribution. We had cases involving free speech and on the abortion issue. And then we had this whole series of school cases. Andy and I worked on those, and then I'm going to go back a long time. First case was in 1986 at the Supreme Court. Next major case was 1989. We were still in the Rhodes Haverty building.
That's right. In Atlanta. The Rhodes Haverty building.
Yeah. And we had two of those cases, and we had the Mergens case in Lamb's Chapel kind of back to back. So like 90 and 90, 89 and then 91.
Not to forget Coquinda.
No, right in the middle of it. Right. So Abby's got a case. We don't talk about these a lot because we've won them for so many decades, but this is one that involves Bible confiscation, if you can believe it, in 2019. Tell us the story about this case.
So we have a third grader who was bringing his Bible to recess, and that's how he would choose to spend his recess. It was open recess. Children could run around or do what they please for that amount of time. And he began engaging. Students became curious and wanted to read the Bible along with him, and then they wanted to discuss the Bible.
So do you know if it was like a children's Bible or what it was? None of the details?
I mean, I don't have details on what kind of Bible it was, but a teacher became aware that the student was reading from the Bible, instructed the student not to read from the Bible. Okay. The Bible was confiscated.
Okay, let's stop. So you're in free time. You got whatever it is, 45 minutes of free time. They're outside or inside or wherever they're doing the recess. Do whatever you want. Hang with your friends. Do activities, whatever you want. This student brings his Bible, reading his Bible. A couple of kids want to come over and read it with him and want to know what it is and talk about it. Teacher comes in and says, you can't do that.
Right, right.
And doesn't just stop it, but then you're saying, when you say confiscate the Bible, what do you mean?
Took the Bible away.
Grabbed the Bible?
Physically took the Bible away at some point from the child. The principal ends up with a Bible and again instructs the child.
So let's back up because this is important for people to understand. Your fourth grader, so how old is a fourth grader? 9, 10?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. 9 or 10 has the Bible confiscated, and the teacher gets it and then sends this like it's, they're treating it like it's hazardous material, and they send it to the principal. Then what happens?
Well, the principal, again, instructs the child that he can no longer bring his Bible to school, not just to recess, to school period. And that,
so no Bibles in the school.
No Bibles in the school, and that he cannot meet with other students during recess to discuss the Bible or religious beliefs.
All right, let's stop right there for a second. So first of all, Students do not surrender their rights to freedom of speech at the schoolhouse gate. Tinker versus Des Moines Independent School District, 1969, I believe. I may be off by a year or two. But Tinker versus Des Moines. Mm-hmm. Okay, that's the Supreme Court case. So, Harry, that established precedent is about, you know, 50 years old, 40-something years old.
I think that is correct, but I think it's also important to note that we live in a contemporary moment that is marked by profound cultural division. In 2007, I wrote a law review article entitled Shaming Kindergartners, Channeling Dred Scott, Freedom of Expression Rights in Public Schools. And with respect to that particular article, I focused on an attempt to take from a five-year-old a mural which basically had Jesus Christ prominently displayed in fighting for the environment. And so they took this poster, really, from the child, and this then sparked a case that went up to the United States Supreme Court. So I think we are dealing with a root and branch effort by a number of people to remove religion from public schools. And I think the ACLJ is doing a great job fighting back.
You know, Andy, you talked about old school. We had a lot of these cases back in the 90s and 80s.
Yes. Yeah, so,
I mean, there was like a ton of them. There really was.
We would get calls and letters from parents and from relatives of kids who were trying to simply read the gospel in the public school or discuss it, and the principals misapprehending what the law was, thinking that, no, I can't allow this. We set them right, and the child was allowed to do what the child should be allowed
to
do.
Imagine how freaked out you are as a 9- or 10-year-old. It's hard for most of us to imagine these days, but if you've got young kids, you can imagine that a principal comes and yanks your Bible away and then goes on to tell you, not just that, but that you're also prohibited. I'm sure they didn't use that language. If they did, the 10-year-old must be really confused and upset. Prohibited from meeting with other Christians during recess.
That's basically what it was.
I mean, principal said that to him. You're prohibited from meeting with other Christians during recess. You're telling that to a 9 or 10-year-old child in the fourth grade, and the ACLJ gets involved.
We're going to get into that. So the Bible ends up at the principal's office, right?
Right.
Then what happens?
And then he's then given the instruction that not only can he not bring his Bible, you can't talk about Jesus and your religious beliefs with other children during recess. And then the parent contacts the ACLJ.
Okay, so was this a contact we got via internet?
Yes.
In the old days, it used to be a letter or a phone call. Now it's right online. So they filled. And by the way, if you go to ACLJ.org, there's a form you can go to. It says need legal assistance, and that's how this came in. So for people to understand, because we don't talk about these cases much anymore. Mm-hmm. You ended up with the contact, or your team did. So what happened then?
We do. So within 24 hours, we try to immediately reach out to that parent. And we did, gathered the information, prepared a demand letter, and sent it off to the school immediately.
All right. So you sent it off to the school. And hold a picture of it up. So we sent basically a demand letter, correct? Mm-hmm. Here's what it looks like, folks. There it is. Can we get it on? Abby's holding it. There you go. So that's on ACLJ letterhead. It's a formal legal demand. What did we ask for?
Well, we outline the law, which here is undisputable and very, very clear. And then we just demand assurances that the child is going to be allowed to bring his Bible and read it during any non-instructional time during school, to talk about his religious beliefs unhindered and without harassment, and assurances that they now fully understand how the law applies to the situation and will not impinge upon student rights again.
So what did they come back with? So that was our demand. So we sent out a letter saying, this is what the law is. This is what you have to do, defending the student's right to have the Bible in school. And then what did they come back and say?
So the school responds, the school district's council responds typically to the letter, to our letters. And in this case, they assure us that they're going to abide by federal law. They never admit that what they did was illegal, but they provide assurances that they will abide by federal law from here on out. And they assured us that the student would now be allowed to bring his Bible to school and read it during non-instructional time.
So the end result, Harry, is the policy basically just simply follows the law.
Well, one of the big issues, of course, in this whole area is what is the law and what should the law be? In the United States, everyone has the right to freedom of expression, including the right to religious freedom. On the other hand, public school principals, who in my judgment lack a basic understanding of the United States Constitution, seek to enforce an exclusionary perspective with respect to religion. So bringing a Bible to the school from the perspective of a principal or a teacher sometimes is seen as offensive. This is inconsistent with the law as adjudicated by the United States Supreme Court. We all enjoy the right of freedom of religion, and the school cannot enforce a particular religious preference. That is my understanding of the law and what the law should be.
But what's so interesting here, Andy, I find, is we litigated these cases. I'm trying to think the first one, sitting in that office that we had in Atlanta in 1987, 86. And it was, the law was actually not crystal clear then, but was clearly going in our direction. Then we had the two big Supreme Court wins on those issues, the Bible study case, Mergens, and then Lamb's Chapel, where you couldn't treat religion differently than anything else. And you thought that should end it, and here we are in 2019, 30 years later.
Yeah, 33 years later, 36 years later, and we're talking about the same thing. You would have thought that the ideas and the concepts and precepts enunciated by the Supreme Court would have percolated down to the high school principals and the teachers, but 36 years later, we're still fighting the same battle, albeit in isolated circumstances. But the important thing is that Abby wrote a letter, I read the letter, an excellent letter, to the point, cited the cases, the statutes, the law, very persuasively and in a nice fashion. It wasn't in your face. It was just, let me tell you, on the assumption that you don't understand and you're ignorant of the law, what it is. And having seen that, they literally had the road to Damascus revelation and realized that this is what you have to let this child do.
So we now have two more contacts.
We do. This is not as uncommon as you would think. So we have one in which a teacher overheard a student talking about Jesus and instructed her privately not to talk about Jesus any longer.
Okay, so, I'm going to talk about that when we come back from the break. What's the other one?
It's a very similar one to that.
All right, so we're going to do that, and we're going to update you on the Buddhist meditation cases. A little old school ACLJ for a couple of segments here. I think it's a nice break from the others. We'll take your calls on all this, 800-684-3110. Don't forget the matching challenge.
That's right. Another matching challenge month, so it's a great time to double the impact of your donation to the ACLJ. Let me explain it for you. So if you donate $25 right now online by your credit card at aclj.org, we have a donor ready to match that. You've got to make the initial donation, but they're ready to match that $25. All your charge is $25, but essentially you've raised $50 for the ACLJ, doubling the impact of your donation at aclj.org.
Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. Whether it's defending religious freedom, protecting those who are persecuted for their faith, uncovering corruption in the Washington bureaucracy, and fighting to protect life in the courts and in Congress, the ACLJ would not be able to do any of this without your support. For that, we are grateful. Now there's an opportunity for you to help in a unique way. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's Matching Challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. This is a critical time for the ACLJ. The work we do simply would not occur without your generous support. Take part in our Matching Challenge today. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at aclj.org.
That like our music, we actually had some of our band, not everybody, but some of our band in yesterday to kind of warm up the chops and get ready to go again, and we had a good time. We may be doing a live event, looks like we are, at the end of April, be the last day of our matching challenge campaign, so we're looking at doing a live event from our studio here. We'll have a live audience, like Jordan will host it like last time. We had a lot of fun with that. It'll be a new set list, so that should be fun. All right, so we were talking about, so we had one Bible confiscation case resolved successfully. Now there are two others. Let's talk about those.
We have two others involving school instruction to children that they can't speak about their religious beliefs at school. So in one instance, the child was instructed privately and then kind of criticized and admonished in front of the entire classroom because the teacher then announced the instruction to the entire classroom and essentially instructed the children, you cannot talk about Jesus. That's something that your parents do at home. You can do with your parents, but not here in school.
So, Harry, you're shaking your head. This was the common misconception that existed throughout the 80s and 90s, and evidently in some schools in 2019.
I think that's true, but I think it's also important to note that this presumption still exists culturally. So the question becomes, given our contemporary moment with profound cultural division, particularly coming from global elites, can students talk about religion, particularly a Judeo-Christian religion? Philosopher Daniel Dennett has argued that the evolution of religion reflects the stubborn persistence of a bad meme from which inoculation and isolation is required. And this exclusionary perspective suggests that parents who teach religion should be should be subject to charges of child abuse. So within our public schools, independent of the judiciary, we have a sense that Judeo-Christian beliefs are offensive. They ought to be excluded. And parents and their children who still believe in Judeo-Christian teaching, those individuals should be subject to either removal from school or they should be told they cannot speak about Jesus, even though, of course, many of these schools allow alternative religious teachings, which I think Abby can talk about. So I think we still have a problem, and the problem is located largely in public schools who misunderstand the Supreme Court's jurisprudence on the First Amendment.
Go ahead, Abby.
Well, and it's, as Harry said, not only are we instructing children that they can't talk about their Judeo-Christian beliefs, but on the other spectrum of that, it's okay to talk about any other religious beliefs. In fact, it's okay for teachers to instruct children on other religious beliefs.
You have one of those cases, too, right now.
Yeah, we do.
We do have an inquiry. Yeah,
we
go
do.
Ahead and talk about this one.
So in New York, we have a situation in which an elementary school-aged child was subjected to instruction on Oracle cards, very similar to tarot cards. And each child was instructed to pick an oracle card, instructed to research what that oracle card meant, and somehow tied in with that, we also had a discussion of spirit animals.
Spirit animals. So that practice you can do, teach them what the Christians believe about the Lord's Prayer, and you'd have a constitutional meltdown. So I used to make this argument, and a friend of mine actually came up with this phrase, that they treat religion like it's asbestos in the ceiling tile, and it's got to be hazardous material, and you got to have like special gloves to do it. That's why you confiscate the Bible. But I will say this. There are members of the the United States Senate. I thought about this then. Senator Lankford was in that piece we played during the break. There are members of the United States House and Senate that are concerned about this.
There are members of the United States Senate that are concerned about it. But, Jay, there are also their colleagues who actually make some of the same attacks on nominees that are to be federal judges or members of the cabinet.
True.
Religion seems to be a place that disqualifies them for federal services. Well, we had that situation with Dianne Feinstein and others. But you're right. Senator Lankford's been a champion on this. There are others. Jay, I had a couple of thoughts while you were talking with Abby there. Number one, how proud of that fourth grader must those parents be that he would choose to read a Bible at recess? He's ahead in life of where I was as a fourth grader, I'll tell you that. But the other thing, the other thought I had, the reason the law is correct on this, Jay, in many ways is because of the work that we did do 20 years ago, but it still takes the people whose rights are infringed upon standing up and asking for our help and actually asserting those rights. Otherwise, the situations that Abby describes, Jay, those would carry. We do have to fight against them when they occur. Otherwise, those abuses will win the day.
Yeah, I think that, look, I think standing up for these parents is key. We did get a great question on Facebook, and that was, more on this Buddhist meditation practice issue. So where are we on that? I know you've had conversations back. What's the status? I still see, when I see the contacts every morning, I still see we're getting those from time to time.
We do. Yeah. I haven't counted up how many we've received recently, but I mean, we have at least 15 clients in mindfulness cases right now.
What's the status with the curriculum company and the schools?
So it varies. We've received different responses. Some school districts have decided to reevaluate whether they want to proceed with the mindfulness curriculum in the following year. A few have removed the more problematic quotes and mantras that they're playing in the classroom. But the majority of the responses, it's the same. And that is, this is not religious instruction. We're going to continue to do it.
You know, Andy, I thought about this. Remember we had those cases involving the five pillars of Islam, Jordan? You remember these two. Mm-hmm. And that they were teaching the five pillars of Islam. You had to adopt a Muslim name. You bowed towards Mecca. You prayed five times a day. And they did this in a social studies class. We were aggressive about it because we thought it was wrong. But, of course, we were looked at, you know, people say you're like a bigot to do that.
Yeah, well, we're not a bigot to do that. What they were doing was instilling a religious situation, a la T.E. Lawrence, you know, into the minds of these young kids. There's a difference between teaching the history of a religion,
right?
What it's about, how it developed, who advocated it, what their tenets are, what their beliefs are, and then taking a child and having him pick an animal. Like a rat, and saying that I'm going to the spirit of the rat, and I'm going to be imbued with that, and I'm going to then somehow translate that into me, or somehow make some extraterrestrial.
Did you say spirit of the rat?
Well, I mean, that's what they're saying. Pick an animal, a spirit animal. Why not a rat? Pick anything. Pick a beaver. But I mean, pick stupid animals that you do that to. But I don't care whether it's stupid or not. You don't inculcate that as a religious tenet to a child.
I want to play for you an audio. You're going to hear the audio of a commercial we did about the work of the ACLJ, which sums up these exact cases.
I was at a board meeting at Jews for Jesus, and the executive director said, "We've got a case. The Supreme Court had just granted review. It was about literature distribution at airports."
We wanted to have the Bible study meet in the school, but it turned into a problem when the principal said, "No, you can't have it."
I told her that I wanted to sing Noel, and the principal said that we can't have anything to do with Christ in our songs.
We marched around the country defending evangelism in Chicago, in Boston, in New York, Atlanta, Texas, Southern California, Northern California, and points in between.
The IRS is expected to reveal the results of an internal investigation that shows the agency targeted conservative groups.
This was a complete misuse of the Office of the Internal Revenue Service.
We only persevered because the ACLJ was there.
The federal courts do not need to become monitors of state trespass actions, and that's all this is.
We were looking for the right to speak our minds and our consciences, and we won that right today.
Those of us that believe in life know that we're on the right side of history. We understand full well, children are children, and they're precious in God's sight, and they're precious in our nation's sight, and they're precious to parents.
Religious persecution is a situation where your life is literally put in jeopardy simply because of what you believe.
Can you help? Can you do something? He's on death row, and so we launched an international campaign.
If we don't use that freedom to advocate for these people suffering under religious persecution, who will?
All right, folks, that tells you what we do at the ACLJ. Support our work at ACLJ.org. Matching challenge campaign in effect, ACLJ.org. Back with more in a moment.
At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's matching challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at ACLJ.org.
Talking about freedom. We will
Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Sekulow Live. And now, Chief Counsel for the American Center for Law and Justice, Jay Sekulow.
We've kind of had a flashback in this last broadcast. We talked about cases we had started the ACLJ, these Bible and school cases, these confiscation of Bibles, and we've had some good success. We talked about the Buddhist meditation cases, which is an interesting aspect that you remember these cases we had, it's called mindfulness, and Abby just said something I think is important for our audience to understand, because this kind of shows you the dual, when it's, you know, when it was the five pillars of Islam and not just teaching about Islam, but having students engage in Islamic practice, that the schools, especially in California, were allowing. Not only allowing, it was part of the curriculum. But in the mindfulness case, which is Buddhist meditation practices, their argument is what? That it's scientifically based?
Yeah, so explain that. Yes. So it's kind of a, one, they insist it's not religious. And then it's, but even if it was, science shows that this is working. So there is scientific research to back
that
this
meditation
up.
Works. And you, your response works. To that is?
Well, twofold. First, it doesn't matter. There is scientific research to show how effective prayer is in resolving all sorts of issues, and precisely the ones that they need to be, that they're seeking to resolve in public schools, which is behavioral issues and concentration issues. The other response to that, though, is, well, let's look at the scientific research. What does scientific research about mindfulness actually demonstrate? There are a lot of negative effects, and there is insufficient research to support.
What are the negative effects of that? Because we've got 15 of these cases right now.
Depression, anxiety, hallucinations. The list goes on.
So not so good.
Not so good.
Not so good. There you go. That's your public school update of the, but your ACLJ front and center on that, which is good. All right. I want to get into a couple other topics. One very important. We're about to get an announcement of a summit with China. And, Than, right now the vice premier, I guess, is in Washington, correct?
Yeah, the vice premier is going to meet down at the White House with senior-level officials, Jay. Of course, the foundation of this is the economic talks, and I think there's a good chance that there might be an announcement coming out of that meeting today. But the bottom line is, Jay, it appears that an economic deal of some sort is very close with the United States and China. But I think you're correct to point out that this is an opportunity for a client of ours, Pastor John Saw, who's in prison there. Jay, I think this would be good news on a number of fronts, certainly the economic front. But I would just say, again, this administration has done something that previous administrations would not do. They've taken a critical moment like this where there's an economic issue on the table that is of significance to both countries. And we're talking about two superpowers here. And they have been willing to insert a human rights case, the case of Pastor John Saw, into the middle of that. We'll see what news comes out of this meeting this afternoon with the vice premier. I do think a summit with President Xi is likely, but I also know that the administration is putting forward the case of Pastor Saw. So two big things happening in that sphere of the world right now.
I am very encouraged by one of the, a number of things the administration is doing, but the idea that they're tying in, Jordan, the economic, you know, issues with human rights is very, very important.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that, I mean, to talk about Pastor Saw's situation is, of course, very important as a case where working on directly, but then to go to Harry, I mean, the economic boom this could be to the United States at a time when we've been booming, this could be yet another jolt to the U.S. economy if it's announced today or very soon that the tariffs are over and that the deal has been made. I mean, this could quickly add another huge boost to our economy.
I think you're absolutely correct. So, Jordan, I would say that Trump's decision to announce a China summit perhaps today is a very positive development for the United States economy. While many critics have charged that a trade deal with China cannot take place or will not advance our interests or that such a trade deal is impossible, apparently President Trump is poised to announce plans for a future summit which will have positive economic benefits, positive geopolitical benefits, and it may lead to the release of Pastor Saw.
I mean, that's the thing that is very encouraging. So I will tell you this. We're going to continue to raise that issue. President, Vice President, Secretary of State already involved and their offices. The fact that there'll be a summit, Andy, there's only 30 seconds here, that gives you the opportunity to bring these things, clear the deck on those issues.
People who have the authority, such as Sun Xiaoping definitely does, to make a decision on behalf of his country, and President Trump, who has the moral authority, maybe not the ability to make the ultimate decision in terms of what Congress has to do, but does have that gravitas that has shown to be effective.
So from the Bibles and the school confiscation to getting a pastor out of jail in China, ACLJ front and center. Back with more in a moment.
At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. Whether it's defending religious freedom, protecting those who are persecuted for their faith, uncovering corruption in the Washington bureaucracy, and fighting to protect life in the courts and in Congress, the ACLJ would not be able to do any of this without your support. For that, we are grateful. Now there's an opportunity for you to help in a unique way. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's Matching Challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. This is a critical time for the ACLJ. The work we do simply would not occur without your generous support. Take part in our Matching Challenge today. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at aclj.org. Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift.
Let's go up to our Washington, D.C. studio. I want Van Bennett to address the action that's being taken on behalf of judges and judicial confirmations. What's the latest, then?
Yeah, we've been pushing, Jay, as is constitutionally permitted, for the president to get his judicial nominations as well as his executive nominations seated. There's been historic obstruction, Jay. Generally, during the first two years of administration, you have something on the average of four cloture votes, which is a vote to basically to delay the final vote in the Senate. You have about four of those for the first 2 years. There were 124 of them in the first 2 years of the Trump administration. Jay, that is about to change. Yesterday in the Senate, Mitch McConnell deployed what is known as the nuclear option. This is something that has been used by both parties in the past to change the precedent of the Senate. Precedent is a way that the rules are enforced, and Rule 22 is the cloture rule in the United States Senate. If you remember, Harry Reid used this nuclear option to lower the cloture vote threshold to 51 votes. You no longer had to get 60 for lower court nominees. Mitch McConnell used the same mechanism to extend that vote threshold to the Supreme Court. When Neil Gorsuch was being considered, he used it again yesterday, Jay, to limit the amount of debate time that is allowed on lower court nominees once it is already known that that nominee has the vote. So if you know that nominee is going to pass, no longer do you have to run 30 hours of debate time, essentially wasting Senate floor time. You only have to run 2 hours. Now, Jay, that's not going to apply to the Supreme Court. It's not going to apply to the circuit court or to cabinet level. But for all of those district judges that are pending in the United States Senate, for all of those lower level executive nominees, and there are literally hundreds of them pending in the United States Senate, this will speed that process up. Jordan, in my view, this was long overdue. This just says once a nominee has the votes to clear, the Senate is going to vote on him 2 hours later.
You're talking about the deputy UN ambassador having to go through 2 hours instead of 30 hours. The deputy secretary of state, the number two at the State Department, 2 hours instead of 30 hours. The deputy attorney general, the number two at DOJ, 2 hours instead of 30 hours. So it's any political appointee that is not cabinet level. And each president kind of chooses their cabinet, but it's about 15 that are cabinet. There's hundreds of political appointees that need to be made to run an effective government, Than. And this means that, I mean, we're talking from almost the very top of the departments throughout the department. So from the number two at the department on down will now be able to get to their job very quickly, and as well as those district court judges.
That's right. And I would say a couple of things, Jordan. Remember, this only takes place once you know that the nominee has the votes to pass. If they do not have the votes to pass, if they can't get to those 51 votes, then this does not happen. It is only when 51 senators have actually gone to the floor and said, we are going to vote for this nominee, that this rule change or this precedent change would take place. And Jordan, the other point that I would make really builds on the one you just made. Look, you can disagree with who is elected president of the United States, but you are doing a disservice to your country if you do not allow that president to stand up a government. You can oppose certain nominees if you don't think they are qualified, but to do this widespread obstruction and to leave hundreds of mid-level posts inside an administration vacant, Jordan, in my view, you are preventing a full government from standing up, and you are doing a disservice to your country as an elected official.
I mean, you can't run the FBI without a director and a deputy director. And by the way, those would be two positions that I think would fall under this, not cabinet level. So including like FBI director, IRS commissioner, only 2 hours of debate because, again, not cabinet level.
Yep.
But you can't run these federal government agencies. You could be the greatest person in the world, most conservative, want to cut back. You can't run the State Department without a number two. You can't run the DOJ without a number two or the DOD without a number two. And so the fact is, this is – I think that the left has actually picked up on how big this is more than the right. Because it's not involving circuit court judges or Supreme Court's nominees or cabinet members. But the left has figured out, whoa, this is a huge change in how you will staff the federal government by political appointees and nominate judges through the federal courts, get those district court judges in who ultimately one day may become circuit court judges themselves.
Abby, I was thinking about this in light of the cases we were talking about in the first half hour. You know, the Department of Education has guidelines too, and they have religious liberty guidelines. These are all, I mean, this is going back, I'm thinking 1996 maybe is when they were, maybe they've been updated. But I remember working on them in 1996. Mm-hmm. And you had these Department of Education talking about these, you know, mid-level cabinet positions, you know, deputies. The Department of Education had guidelines on religious liberty in the schools.
They did, and they still do. And you're right, it was the mid-90s. And for the longest time, it was available at the same link.
Yep.
And then during the Obama administration, the link disappeared. You couldn't find the document. You had to search for it.
Put the brakes on. So you had a Department of Education guideline issued in 1996, which, by the way, was under President Bill Clinton. And then, so they were there for President Bush for 8 years, there for President Clinton. And under the Obama administration, what happened?
At some point, the link became a bad link. It was kind of removed, and you had to dig for it to find it.
So they basically made it less accessible.
Yes, yes.
So, Than, what's the kind, okay, this is... So now we, but these are issues
JJ,
where the department,
I know
go
what
ahead.
This was, Jay.
Yeah, what was it?
It was a glitch. We know
Yeah, they're
this.
Big
it
on glitch. We get Logan back to talk about the glitch. That was his specialty, was the glitch. The glitch was called an edit. But it shows you how the kind of the hostile nature of this. I wanted to talk about that. What is the impact, Harry, on the China issue? Back to that for a moment. From a trade standpoint and a human rights standpoint.
Well, I think it's important to note that the United States and China have engaged in 9 rounds of negotiation. The United States has pressed China to make commitments on purchasing more American goods and increasing protections for foreign intellectual property in order to rebalance our economic relationship. So I think it's clear beyond question that this possible deal will have a positive effect on the United States economy. But it's also equally important to note that this agreement could have positive geopolitical benefits that may help in dealing with, for instance, North Korea, perhaps dealing with Venezuela, and certainly paving the way forward, perhaps, for the release of Pastor Tsao. So I also think the United States economy has been operating under a burden. In other words, will a deal get done or not? And if a deal, in fact, is achieved, this will enable the United States economy to take off. That will provide real-world benefits to average working men and women in the United States. But I also think this will improve the United States' status and prestige abroad in negotiating additional deals, both economic and political, with our adversaries as well as with our allies. I think it's important to note that right now, Germany is increasing its contacts with Russia. Even though there's a lot of hysteria about Russia in the United States, I think a deal with China will be helpful in terms of the United States' ability to encourage the Germans to reconsider greater dependence, for instance, on Russian gas, which will actually reduce German flexibility going forward if indeed there's another geopolitical crisis involving Russia.
All right, I want to turn for the rest of the broadcast, which is about 2 minutes in this segment and then one more segment, into the border, because something happened yesterday, was reported yesterday, and that's exactly what we've been concerned about, that everybody's been kind of, oh, this can't really be happening.
Oh, the left loves to mock us when we say that terrorists utilize our southern border just like drug cartels, that Hezbollah works with these drug cartels, and so they're utilizing our porous border as well. Here's a news report. This is from Washington Examiner, but again, also this is out everywhere. A Syrian national was apprehended trying to enter the U.S. illegally, hiding in a train from Mexico. So on our southern border, 46-year-old Syrian man had been detained for attempting to enter the U.S. from Mexico illegally by hiding in a train, Border Protection agents say. CBP agencies apprehended the man after a train from Mexico passed through an imaging system that we have at
the border.
Yep, it tells you about the technology. In downtown Calexico. And they noticed an anomaly on the lower side of the commercial rail car. They stopped it. It was an individual man. He's been taken to a secure location. It was confirmed that he is a Syrian national without documentation authorizing any kind of entry into the United States. He has now been imprisoned, and he will remain in prison until he is tried.
That area of Calexico
has apprehended 12% more illegal aliens in the fiscal year 2019 compared to the same time frame in 2018. That is a huge increase. I mean, a 12% increase in just one city of those agents in Calexico, a 12% increase. And now we have, again, a Syrian national, which could pose a serious national security threat.
Sure.
And people like to ignore that that's one of the problems with the poor southern borders.
The apprehension highlights the fact that none of our inspections are routine, especially when people purposely attempt to avoid the process, Andy, so said our CPB director.
Well, it shows that those people who are down there representing us and trying to protect the border are on their toes and doing the right thing. And we don't have enough of them. We deployed, 750?
Yep.
And then we're bringing them from the Canadian border and putting them down there. But they're doing the right thing. And what are they finding? Syrians hiding in trains.
Yep.
He was up to no good to come into the U.S.
No question. All right, so we're taking your calls. Last segment, you can ask us anything. Phone lines are wide open for you. 1-800-684-3110, 800-684-3110. Politics, immigration, schools, you name it. 800-684-3110. Back with more in just a moment.
Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. Whether it's defending religious freedom, protecting those who are persecuted for their faith, uncovering corruption in the Washington bureaucracy, and fighting to protect life in the courts and in Congress, the ACLJ would not be able to do any of this without your support. For that, we are grateful. Now there's an opportunity for you to help in a unique way. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's Matching Challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. This is a critical time for the ACLJ. The work we do simply would not occur without your generous support. Take part in our matching challenge today. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at aclj.org.
Joanna on Facebook says, Professor Hutchinson for president in 2024.
Oh.
See, who would you run against 2024? Who would it be in 2024?
Michelle Obama.
Now, a lot of people think
the
that.
The Democrat side, I think Michelle Obama. And the Republican side, you might, who knows? Mike Pence is probably going to be.
Yeah. I guess Mike Pence.
Running.
No, they're all friends. All right.
Yes.
I did want to get a reaction from Abby because we started the case. We've gone from Syrian nationals at the border to what's going on in Washington to the Bible case, and I want to kind of circle back around to that and to say, what is the parent reaction? We talked about this on Facebook and Periscope, but for our audience, what is the parental reaction on this?
It's widespread. Most of the time, it's disbelief. Now, I'll tell you, some parents in some of the more liberal states, Oregon, California, they're not surprised at all. It is, for them, it is a daily fight in the public school system.
Yeah.
I mean, they spend their afternoons going through the curriculum with their students and actually teaching them the truth, because we know that much of the public school curriculum
is just
horrific. Is also a problem right now.
Yeah.
So it just depends. But when you have a Bible confiscated, I can't think of a more disturbing, clear violation of a student's rights.
And what a message it sends to the kid. I mean, think about that for a minute. You mean, you know, that you're afraid to take a Bible to school because it's what? Offensive to somebody? I mean, in this day and time? I mean, this is the absurd nature of what, but again, the ACLJ is there. All right, Than, I want to go to you. Washington, what do we expect happening this week and next? Nothing?
Not a whole lot, Jay. The border situation is going to get more attention, and here's what I hope will happen. I hope that there will be actually a proposal from Senate Republicans. I think it would be Lindsey Graham if there was, to again try to address the needs that are needed at the border, the resources. Jay, I just think Republicans need to keep circling back to this, even though they've been obstructed by Democrats. The crisis is just too real not to. I mean, look, you put two pieces of data together, the terrorist that's trying to sneak in, the fact that ISIS told their adherents to do it this way. Jay, how many of those 100,000 apprehensions were terrorists? How many of those that we didn't apprehend were terrorists? This is something that has to be done. The other thing that will happen, Jay, more judges, more nominees will move through at a faster pace now that yesterday's move was made. You only have to move 2 hours of debate once a nominee has the votes to clear.
Let me tell you what else may happen next week in Washington, D.C. There may be a report from the Attorney General of the United States. So we're looking at a release of the Mueller report. Could be as early as next week. There's already, you see this leaking that's going on. I'm not going to get into a lot of conversations about this, but my goodness, supposedly, again, these are anonymous sources inside the special counsel's office, angry basically with the special counsel because of how they viewed various areas of the law.
They couldn't prove a case?
Well,
they should be angry at themselves.
Well, exactly.
I mean, they had enough resources to, like, it's like unbelievable. I won't go any further.
No further.
But to
say, just handle
that.
We'll announce it. We'll talk about it when it comes out.
So many people just could not believe the four pages. I mean, we saw the meltdown. We've talked about that.
No, they can't. No, they still are in light shock.
And if it's 400-page version of it, I think they're still going to be.
It'll be a 400-page version of the four pages is what I suspect. I don't know. I haven't seen it. Jackie's calling from Arizona on line three. Go ahead, Jackie.
Yeah, thank you for taking my call. And I just wondered, since the president has already declared the national emergency, what are the next steps? Because I thought that he could close the border. Are we still waiting for Congress?
Well, the closing of the border issue raised, really, they kind of backed up on that because the economic consequences of that are significant. But Andy said something and Jordan said something yesterday. That doesn't mean you couldn't do surgical closures.
Yes.
So let's talk about that a little bit.
I think when you say close the border, you say close the border where the areas are most likely to have illegal immigrants and drug flows and the human trafficking come through. And then you keep – what you do is by closing those, you can then focus more attention on the trucks that are coming through and the cargo coming through to make sure there's not people on board, those being trafficked and drugs on that. So I think that you can utilize resources in this – I mean, if we can see a guy in a train corner, you think we could utilize the technology – shut down the corridors necessary, but keep enough open for trade so that there's not a negative impact on the American economy, which means on all of us.
And the Mexican economy.
And the Mexican economy. But the American buyer from whatever income bracket you come from would be impacted if it was totally shut down. If you do these partial, you're not going to feel that that negative impact, but you should get some positive.
And Andy, what do you think about that? You mentioned it yesterday.
Yeah, that's absolutely correct. I mean, we do a surgical strategic closure of the border on those areas that are the most porous, that we know that are the ones in which the illegal aliens are coming in, and let the lanes of traffic that carry the buses, the trucks that are carrying the avocados and other things into the United States that are important parts of the U.S. economy. And because we're dealing with, what, $1.1, $2 billion a day in trade? I mean, it's a big trading partner.
The trade would be a big impact, though, if you just close the border, though, Harry, right?
Absolutely. But I also think the Trump administration is placing economic pressure on Mexico, and as I understand it, it is starting to work. The Mexican government is starting to respond. I would also point out that the Trump administration is engaged in some other proactive measures. So, for instance, the Trump administration, in addition to proposing a wall and issuing a national emergency declaration, has taken affirmative steps to root out fraudulent families. And so under U.S. policy, if you come to the United States with a child, more likely than not, you can stay. So the ICE and other agencies are now looking at adopting a DNA testing program that will allow border officials to assess within 2 hours whether immigrants claiming to be in the same family are telling the truth. And that has been part and parcel of a huge human smuggling operation. And so if you look at McAllen, Texas, a town of 150,000 people, they are inundated with individuals, migrants who are sleeping in doorways, on park benches, and the like, in part because of fraud.
I have been saying the DNA testing for a year and a half. I don't know why that's so complicated. I don't even know why it takes 2 hours. Usually they say you can get the results back in 50, I guess, the way they process it. But if you're concerned about family unification, I think you start with, are they a family or is it, you know, is it child smuggling, sex trafficking, which, Abby, is a huge, I mean, right here where our media center is, wherever you're listening, the sex trafficking issue is in your town. There's no, I mean, it's everywhere.
It is, yes, particularly where several interstates connect.
Yes. Yep.
Yeah.
The biggest thing on that, by the way, is what Abby just said. So when you've got like an I-85 and an I-20, Atlanta, I-65, I-40, Nashville, Birmingham would be I-65 and 20 as well.
You've got a major interstate.
I-95, the corridor up from Florida. These
north,
are
south, east, west.
Yeah. They want to get into the system and then disperse, and they disperse quickly. All right, Than. President's going down tomorrow to Mexico, to the border in Mexico. What do you think Congress is going to do on this?
Well, he's going to see a portion of the wall that was finished. Congress is not moving very quickly on this. Jay, the two things I would tell you very quickly that are also important. He's also, the president has directed Border Patrol agents to look at some of these asylum cases and to determine whether or not there's credible fear. That's a great step. Here's the other thing, Jay. Remember that national emergency? Only a portion of those funds actually required the national emergency. He has instructed the Department of Defense to reprogram $1 billion for this fiscal year to the wall. That has already happened. So to the caller's last point, those different tranches of money that were involved, they are moving towards the wall as we speak.
We are days away from filing three briefs in major cases involving Planned Parenthood defunding. More than 20 states and Planned Parenthood have filed lawsuits to block a federal rule that would defund millions of our tax dollars from going to the abortion industry. As I said, three briefs being prepared. You can support the work of the ACLJ at ACLJ.org in a matching challenge campaign as we fight all these issues you talked about today. We covered a lot of them. But as we're fighting against Planned Parenthood, go to ACLJ.org. Any amount you donate, we get a matching gift for. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's matching challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at ACLJ.